What's up, sports fans and friends? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. I'm one of your hosts, King Cash, joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
It feels like we're almost there.
We're almost there. One day, we won't be in the house anymore. One day, esports will be able to rise again. I want to bring this up really quick. Ladies and gentlemen, please watch esports. All right. Like we were doing pretty good. We were chugging along, and then quarantines happened.
Competitive gaming
for DJM and the likes of those out there. We were doing great. And I forgot that I am a shill, as probably the other people on this panel are. And I don't mind an online tournament, but it seems everyone else does. Because the numbers have been not what they used to be.
Oh, is this for like CSGO or for...
CS, Valorant. League's been doing okay. They've seen like a slight drop in numbers. But kind of overall, especially for Valorant, which is kind of the new kid on the block, their tournaments have not been seeing great numbers. People are kind of liking that to not enough people liken that to a couple of things. One, the game's observer stuff is kind of garbage still. Riot has admitted that they're still kind of working on making the game fun to watch while someone else is watching it. But they're still kind of, their primary focus is on getting the game correct first. So the observer experience is a little weak. The numbers as far as tournaments have been a bit weak because the people who have teams to field are primarily Europe right now. And there's maybe three full teams in America, even though everyone announced that they have a team. If you actually go and look at some of those rosters, most of those rosters are made up of one person right now. So it's kind of just in a weird landscape. And then CS has just kind of seen a little bit of a dwindle in numbers across streaming platforms, just kind of because it seems like nobody wants to watch online tournaments for some reason.
I feel like if league numbers are a little lackluster, it's because everybody looks like shit compared to one team right now. So
true.
We just had the second place team versus the first place team, and the second place team lost in 30 minutes. Yeah. Which is usually like a sign that one team is just overwhelmingly better than the other. So Cloud9 is continuing their dominance and kicking shit out everybody. They have not lost yet during the summer split. Even the most anticipated matchup of the season so far kind of just turned into a blowout. So it's like watching the Warriors kick the shit out of everybody.
Still hyper at some point, the last two Super Bowls we've had, so you know.
Hey, I enjoyed the last one, even though
the last one was fine.
And you know what also gets kind of boring sometimes is Formula One racing, when you've got one team that's just completely dominant over the others. We had two races back to back at the Red Bull Ring in Austria. Mercedes driver Valtteri Bottas won the first one, which was actually pretty exciting because a bunch of cars didn't finish and had a bunch of mechanical problems, which sounds bad, but it's when it comes to race drama, that's actually that actually makes things pretty interesting, especially when they drop out at different points of the race. And then Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton won the second one, and he led that one from the start of the race to the end, and to the point where nobody even got close to him, not even his teammate. So that was a bit of a boring race, but it was a pretty interesting finish. If you watch more than just the people in the front, then Formula One can get pretty exciting. But if you only focus on what's in front, then it's almost a foregone conclusion. Who's going to run away with the season?
Mm-hmm.
They already have their first COVID breach 2 weeks in, or at least in the week in between the first two races. Both Valtteri Bottas and Charles Leclerc went and violated quarantine. Well, I guess it wasn't strictly forbidden, but they left in between races to go back home to Monaco, and apparently did pass tests on the way back, but still a little weird that just only 1 week in they couldn't just stay where they were for 1 week, and that doesn't really bode well for all these other sports that are starting their bubble setup. One of those is the NHL. They've kind of finalized their return to play plan. They had it mostly taken care of, but what they didn't have selected were the two cities where they were gonna hold their two bubbles, and they've chosen Edmonton and Toronto, two Canadian cities, because pretty much every American city at this point is untenable.
Yeah, we're fucking, I don't even understand.
The tentative plan to start games on August 1st, they're probably going to report in a week or so to camp, and we'll get some hockey pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I feel like hockey could handle this pretty well. It also depends on the personalities of the people and how much like the racing story before, how much people are willing to commit to these bubbles and these rules and things like that, right? Because we've talked about all these sports leagues trying to implement these things and go about these things and come up with these ideas and stuff like that. But I think one of the things that kind of slips our mind as we talk about this is people's personality and their ability to follow rules, which here in America, we seem to goddamn struggle with day in and day out.
One final note about hockey, the NHL players were conspicuously absent from the last Winter Olympics. They reached a deal with the Olympics to rejoin. So at least next time we see Olympic hockey, we get to see the best players on the men's side. So I guess that'll be fun.
That's just weird business drama that I don't think anyone cared for except for the NHL.
Part of this is because the Winter Olympics interrupts the NHL season.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to plan, if they do choose to let their players go, then they have to plan the schedule around the Olympics. Do it the last couple times, or they didn't feel like they were getting enough money to do that. And, but now that they've worked something out, then we don't have to worry about that.
Do some kind of young talent showcase there has to be a way other than the scummy way that they initially decided to do it. And hopefully whatever deal that they came up with is good on all parts and actually allows us to see kind of the best talent in the Olympics, because I have always stood by. I like watching world sports. I love watching people try to field their best against our best in a sense.
I think the Olympics before it, and I think that was the one that had the Canada versus USA final. Mm-hmm. And that was an incredibly exciting, I mean, just the USA run itself was incredibly exciting to watch. And then the way the final ended dramatically in overtime on a Sidney Crosby winner, that was pretty fun to watch too. So I think, I mean, team sports in the Olympics in general, I think, are always super fun to watch. So, yeah. And you don't really get enough of that in the Winter Olympics, just because there are fewer winter type team sports. I guess you kind of have curling, and you have, I can't think of anything else.
Bobsledding, figure skate. No, that's only two people at most.
Yeah.
Bro, I don't. All right, moving on.
It's not a lot.
If you know any other team Olympic sports, hit us up on Twitter. All right, so
soccer.
I don't know what that is, but I want it.
I mean, it's not a thing. It's just like,
I know, but now we have to make it a thing. All right, going on from there, let's talk a little bit about soccer and the goings on there. So Australia, New Zealand awarded the 2023 Women's World Cup. That was a lot to say.
Yeah, they I mean, 2023 is a pretty decent way off, but you know, they got their COVID shit taken care of, so they get to have sports. I'm sure it's not the entire reason why they were awarded this. I think they're the only other competitor for a bid for this was Colombia, who will get their chance eventually. But
yeah,
I think this is a good. I think the last time we kind of had a major, like a major international sporting event in the Australia, New Zealand area was the 2004 Olympics, I think. So it's been a while, and I feel like we kind of neglect the Southern Hemisphere a lot in sports. So, it'll be nice to.
What do so let's move into a little one of the major details here, right? And I want to ask you as a soccer fan, what do you think about this? So they're also talking about having the field expanded from 24 teams to 32 teams.
Yeah, so I think that's I think that's just a good thing in general. The quality of play might dip a little bit, but it's only going to dip for the opening stage. And it might be the case where all the good teams, or at least all the teams we kind of expect to see, get an easier path to the round of 16. Cause then it becomes easier for them to get out of the group stage. But overall, I think it puts more soccer players on the women's side on the map somewhere. It gives more of them a chance to play on the world stage. If some of them play for teams where they're like the only good player, but they never get a chance to compete on the world stage because their team might not be able to compete with a team like the US or Sweden or the mother Canada, it'll give them a chance to do that at this point. So I expanding to 32 is fine. That puts it at the same level as the Men's World Cup, I believe, unless the Men's World Cup has expanded recently, but I don't think any of those plans have come to fruition yet. So if I can remember correctly. So I think overall, just expansion is a good idea. And it won't affect, to me, it won't affect the quality of play in the knockout phase of the tournament, because by that point, all of the extra teams, if you're worried about adding extra fluff teams, all those teams are going to be eliminated by then. And it'll just give a chance for more good soccer players to make a name for themselves. And usually what happens after these international tournaments is somebody makes a name for themselves and gets signed to one of the good club teams. And so, we might see some of those players in the in the leagues in Europe or in the NWSL after this tournament. So I think it'll be a good thing for everybody involved.
Yeah.
The NWSL right now is in the middle of the Challenge Cup. Not a whole lot of international players are able to come and play in it just because of COVID restrictions. But the tournament is chugging along.
And North Carolina is in the lead.
Yeah.
And with 9 points. Three games won.
Yeah, they're kind of a deep powerhouse team. I've been trying to watch Washington Spirit games just because I like watching Rose Lavelle play. The games are on CBS All Access, which I did get a subscription for. The interface is pretty decent. So I think it's worth it if you want to watch soccer during this time period. The MLS is coming back, and the tournament just kicked off this weekend. It didn't get off to a great start because FC Dallas and Nashville SC are both out of the tournament due to COVID. But
yeah,
MLS for some reason has like 20 some teams, more than 20 teams. But most European leagues have 20 teams, at least the top flights do. And MLS is, I think they're getting close to like 28 or so, 28 or 29. And so they can
soon
they lose a couple teams.
We're going to start needing those relegation leagues.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. It's part of it is due to the salary cap system.
Yeah. It annoys the hell out of me, man. I love relegation style sports across the board. It is what got me into soccer. It is what got me into League of Legends. I love the fact that if you are not good enough to compete with the best, then you get dropped and someone else
fills that spot. But then once you get dropped, all your sponsors drop too. And
yeah.
So it's... It is what it is, and I see why they do it the way they do.
Job security. You can't be the best every day. Whatever, man.
So, as far as the tournament itself, they've had to realign the tournament to account for these two missing teams. But the other weird wrinkle about this is they're playing. They're quarantined basically where the NBA players are, not in like the same bubbles, but they're playing at the Wide World of Sports Complex, in Central Florida, and which means dealing with Central Florida heat, which means playing soccer in Central Florida heat. So they have to schedule games either really early in the morning, we're talking like 9 a.m. kickoff time, or really late in the evening, which be as late as a 10:30 p.m. kickoff time. So this just involves really like weird, like I played intramural soccer and was in a weekend league, and getting people to show up not hungover at 9 a.m. is a challenge. Getting people to show up at all was a challenge, but I'm sure these people will show up. But I think a lot of them are used to playing games later in the day. So it's going to be hard for whoever has to deal with that early 9 a.m. game. And I think there's going to be one like every couple days at least, or maybe just on the weekend. It's going to be rough for some of them to get used to it. And I mean, we're always talking about the COVID concerns, but we shouldn't forget about the potential injury concerns of weird shit like that playing into it. And just everything down to like, you need to eat a couple hours before the game, like three hours or so before the game. So,
some people have like weird, like, you know, food and workout and all kind of like rituals, or just Not even ritual. I guess ritual is the best word.
If it's not a ritual, though, you got to get up at like 5:30 just to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And
start getting in your stretches and your warm up and like all those kind of things before you play. So, there are probably people out there sitting there like, a 9 a.m. game, that's nothing. You know, you got to wake up and like get at it. Whereas a normal course of a day, you wake up, you kind of go through your day a little bit, and then you kind of fall into the pace of getting warmed up for a game. No, this you would have to like wake up at a good enough time to start that pacing, eat, let that, kind of flow through your system to give you your energy that you're going to take into the game and all that kind of stuff. And whatever, precursors you have, either, any kind of physio or any kind of therapy that you need to do or like to do before a game, any kind of stretching things and however you do your warm-ups generally. Like, there's a lot that goes into that. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see 9 a.m. games for that.
All right. Let's move on to basketball. Both the NBA and WNBA have entered their bubbles. Both of those bubbles are in Florida. The WNBA's is at the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, which I believe is where the U.S. holds its, like, it's a soccer academies for the national team. I think there's been a lot of posts coming out about like the food that they're dealing with, which doesn't appear so great, but at the same time, it's like they're in quarantine and in general, I think to me, the thing that bothers me the most is not necessarily the quality of like the NBA food, but just the difference in quality between the NBA food and the WNBA food and just the difference in accommodations in general. Like, the WNBA facilities look pretty terrible. I think apparently once everybody's tested and done with quarantine, then they can like serve better food once everybody is allowed to congregate and they can set up buffets and stuff. So, because right now they have to like hand deliver food to every room and keep everybody like quarantined to their rooms right now. Once everybody gets a couple negative COVID tests, then they can release everybody and let them all hang out with each other. So it's going to take a couple days, and then we'll start seeing camps getting set up and practices. Mm-hmm. And on the NBA side, they're going to do a couple untelevised scrimmage games, and then we'll get to see actual games. That'll be exciting, but as we've mentioned before in all of our other stories, we'll have to see how well they can stick to that bubble and how long it's going to last before everything falls apart. I'm strangely optimistic just because I feel like the bubble is going to shrink in size as teams get eliminated. So the teams that are going to take it the least seriously are going to be the ones that get eliminated first, because they're the ones that kind of just got invited to fill out the field of teams. And but once those guys are out, then everybody that's left is going to be hopefully serious enough that they don't want to be the one that fucks it up for their team. And like, you don't want to be the guy that costs LeBron a championship because you violated quarantine.
But they are taking J.R. Smith under their team, so we'll see how that goes.
On the NBA side, on the WNBA side, there's been a bit of controversy because the co-owner of the Atlanta Dream is Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler, who you might recognize from the insider trading scandal, where she bought and sold a bunch of COVID-related stocks while she was briefed on coronavirus before it took off in the U.S. And then made a bunch of money from it, and still hasn't really been prosecuted for that. But yeah, that's the same Kelly Loeffler. She's been very critical of the WNBA's efforts to join in with the Black Lives Matter movement. They want to paint messages on the court, mostly just the Black Lives Matter message, and also honor some of the women that have been victims of police violence and racial violence in general. Breonna Taylor kind of being the most obvious name on that list. And Loeffler has been very publicly critical of that, and it just goes counter to like everything that the WNBA stands for. So pretty much the entire league is calling for her to be kicked out. But as we've seen before in cases where there's an owner that needs to get kicked out, that it becomes really difficult to do that. We saw that with Rick Fox. We saw that with Donald Sterling. He's digging her heels in, and
yeah,
it'll be a tough fight. And she's treating this like it's like her freedom of speech is being violated. And even though that's not really the case, I don't know, this is going to get pretty ugly, I think. On the men's basketball side, things have gotten a little ugly with Adrian Wojnarowski getting suspended by ESPN after he sent Missouri Senator Josh Hawley a fuck you email. That's literally all the email said. And then ESPN suspended him when Hawley, you know, took a screenshot of that and put it public. This was in response to Hawley writing a letter to Adam Silver trying to criticize the NBA's selection of approved phrases that they're going to allow players to put on the backs of their jerseys. Like a lot of these are different phrases. I think most of them related to Black Lives Matter and similar movements. You know, like one of them being Black Lives Matters, and then equality, freedom, power to the people, stuff like that. And so they've basically come up with like a list that these players can pick from. And Hawley objected to the fact that A, the NBA selected this list, and B, Hawley kind of has this bugaboo about China stuff. And he's one of those people that like always just brings up China stuff as a reason to criticize different organizations. And he uses it as a platform to grandstand. So he's hit back at the NBA for that and for their handling of the Hong Kong situation with Daryl Morey in the past. So he kind of saw this as an opportunity to do that again. And then Wojnarowski just told him fuck you in an email, and then ESPN got super upset about that and suspended him. So now ESPN is without its lead insider reporter at the start of the NBA season restart. I don't know. It seems excessive to suspend him for that.
From the way the story reads, right, it's kind of like an escalation of events.
DJM is, I think, putting it better than I did. They didn't just get upset, they caved hard. And they caved like bitches, and it's all he said was fuck you, which I mean, we do that all the time on this show, so it's like
yeah, but we also don't have giant corporate sponsors that are going to look at certain things as publicity, right, or marketing or whatever the fuck, you know. So
if they don't mute the players somehow, they're going to hear way worse than that during the season restart without fans in the building to drown out the players. So it's they're just, I mean, I don't want to say they're just words, because obviously words can hurt, and but like, this isn't that bad. This is just a senator getting pissy and then taking it public because he knows that he can use that and try to weaponize the prudish nature of sponsorship to.
Mm-hmm.
It's dumb to me. And I do agree that the NBA should let like a wider selection of phrases be chosen. And I don't know if they're worried that somebody's going to put something controversial on the back of their jersey, just let the player answer for it themselves.
But that's the problem, right? Is no matter what, people are going to view anything that any individual, there is going to be no way to separate an individual as an individual from the NBA, because all the headlines are going to read such and such of X team from the NBA says, and then every ESPN, every news thing from YouTube to the guy on Twitter is going to be like, it's going to boil down to, oh, this is what the NBA thinks about X. Because we have this innate thing in America where we can't separate a person from their job. And for some reason, when somebody says something good or bad, it is also a representation of who they work for some reason. And that is also one of the things that I think once we get to changing everything else, we need to change and start to understand individualism and individual ideas and individuals saying things that don't represent everyone who happens to be standing next to them. Like, yeah, sometimes, I mean,
especially when it comes to players, like they move around a lot. It's a little different than you know, Daryl Morey, who is, it represents his organization in a more representative capacity than say James Harden does or Russell Westbrook. I can see that, but at the same time, I also feel like when something like that does happen, and our next story is the DeSean Jackson story. So it's like the Eagles have found a way to distance themselves from DeSean Jackson's comments, and nobody's really going after the Eagles for this. So, and at the same time, I feel like, nobody went after the 49ers for Colin Kaepernick kneeling. I don't mean to like equate those two, but it's like when a player does something, I think
the problem is people did. And then what happened was everything that ended up happening, right? The NFL shuns Colin Kaepernick, the team shuns him, and whereas they could just be like, oh, he's a human and he has ideas and he says things, right? They removed themselves from him completely to be like, oh no, that's not us. You know, it there's a difference in not doing anything and very adamantly separating yourself from something, you know, like, so like the DeSean Jackson thing, him making anti-Semitic remarks on Instagram, which then does lead to some back and forth of people trying to stand up for what he said or other people demonizing what he said. But I think overall the best take of what has happened here for me is a player, a colleague who is of Jewish descent, comes to him and says, hey, let's have a discussion. And it allows them to have this discussion and echo these things to each other. Yeah, Julian Edelman, let me not name names when names should be named. And it allows that bridge of the thing that we talked about with all the Black Lives Matter stuff and everything else that's going on, is bridging some gaps that have fallen apart, and starting to educate and come together in ways that are so much better than they were before. Everybody has some kind of issue, and educating ourselves around each other is the best part of those things. If any of these goddamn organizations had reached out to Colin Kaepernick and been like, "Hey man, what's your issue?" We'd probably be in a different place right now. We'd probably be in a totally different goddamn place right now, rather than just letting letting the people who wanted to turn him into an enemy do that, you know. And this could have gone that way. Like, this could have, I think if we weren't in the landscape that we were in to a certain degree, and this went to a place where it got out of hand, it could have gotten to a place where the NFL and other people start to distance themselves from DeSean Jackson and go, "Well, he doesn't represent us," and then we find DeSean Jackson without a job, and then we find DeSean Jackson can't get a job in the NFL. But I think because we are in a place where people can choose to be like, "Hey, let's talk about that," I hope that is the change we can conceive to see going forward.
I almost feel like DeSean Jackson's role in this is kind of over.
Yeah.
Like the ripple effects that he created, there's still like offshoots of the story still going on with, like, you know, the people that are being criticized now are all the people that are still digging their heels and trying to defend his initial remarks when he himself has been, you know, shown that he's at least willing to at least demonstrate an attempt to change. You know, he's reached out to the Jewish leaders in the Philadelphia community. You know, he's doing much the same. He's doing the Drew Brees routine, essentially. He's doing what we saw Drew Brees go through after he was heavily criticized for his remarks. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Drew Brees did that, and then everybody saw Drew Brees seemed earnest enough, and so that story went away. So it's, I don't know. I feel like when I say that, like, you know, just let the players, like, let them be accountable for their own mm-hmm. remarks, for the things that they choose to put on the back of their jerseys, I don't know. I envision a world where they say their thing. If they get criticized for, they stand up and explain themselves, and then we have a conversation about it. And then, you know, but at the same time, yeah, I don't necessarily trust everybody in the NBA I don't trust anybody to not put all lives matter on the back of their jersey. With the idea that phrase only exists to diminish the Black Lives Matter movement. I think it's tough because there are a lot of issues that are important to a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. But the one that is important right now to America is the Black Lives Matter movement. That's the one that's on the forefront. Yeah. And so that's the one the NBA has decided to throw their weight behind. So that's why we have this selection of phrases to choose from. And, you know, that's why I stand with Hong Kong is not one of these messages. Okay. So
I mean, I think if it came from a legitimate source, I would almost agree that, like, if you wanted to, that should be a thing you could do, right?
If it was like a player asking for that.
Yeah.
If it was.
Weaponizing something like that is always.
That deserves a fuck you.
Yeah. But to bring it back around to what I would love to see more of, right, is things like what Julian Edelman did, right? Which is like, I think it is so perfectly worded when he says something like, just DeSean and I spoke for a while. We're making plans to use our experience to educate one another. Like, that sentiment is just so perfectly strung of what at my heart, what I want everything to be from now on, right? You use your experience and the experience of what you've been taught and has been handed down to you to pass that on to someone else. And when you pass that on to someone else, you should be willing to accept theirs as well, right? You should be willing to accept their experiences and their life to make you both better people, right? Doesn't have to be necessarily together, right? Because these are two people from two separate teams. But hopefully, because of this, they come out of it better humans with a better understanding of other humans.
Yeah. And a better understanding of the effects that their words have.
Yeah. But yeah, that's on the people thing. Let's talk about how corporations can make other corporations better.
Because sometimes these gestures can be a little bit performative. I feel like DeSean Jackson seems sincere, so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt of that.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of where I'm coming.
Yeah, whether other people choose to, that's up to you. But the, you know, he's not just talking. He's not just issuing a formulaic apology. He's actually doing things. He's meeting with people. He's listening. He's going to donate a bunch of money. It's it's not like a cynical apology tour that he just feels like he has to do now just to rehab his image. This is it. Seems sincere. Sometimes I'm struggling for how to get into this because the Washington NFL
the Redskins
they've definitely done some stuff in the past to try to say, hey, our name isn't that racist. Like, look, let's bring out a bunch of here's the Navajo code talkers. Let's honor them during halftime. Like, they do a bunch of shit like that.
These people have been trying to save their racist name for the last 20 years, and God damn it, time's up.
Yeah, and so what it took was FedEx, who is the title sponsor for their stadium in Landover, Maryland, and then it started with FedEx, but then yeah. Nike joined in, and then Pepsi joined in,
So those are their biggest sponsors, right? So those are their, and we have said this before, we will say this again, I will reiterate this for as long as this show exists. Follow the money, goddammit. Those are your direct pipelines of money, right? So once those start to put the pressure on you, I think that started the, oh, well, you know, hey, maybe we should think about this. And then to continue to hammer that nail, you started to have the retailers, which is your funnel into yourself of, you know, the things that you create, that you sell, that brings revenue back to you, started to go, hey, you know what? We're kind of putting ourselves in alignment with the political landscape of the people that is going on right now. So a lot of these things that we feel like our customers bring to our attention as racist or bad, because we don't want the bad publicity, because we want to keep the dollars in house and make sure we continue to do the right things as giant market retailers. We're no longer going to carry your products and kind of stand behind the other big marketers who have also decided to take a step back from you. Because if we stand next to you, that makes us look bad. So Target, Walmart, Amazon, all kind of put stops on selling merch that was representative of the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, so they are going, apparently the name change is imminent. I think there's been a lot of speculation of what they're going to change the name to, but they have, I think some of the leaks have said that they are, their intent, at least, is like no Native American imagery, period. So they're not going to change their name to something else that is that brings up. I mean, because I think one of the names floating around was like Washington Warriors, which is sometimes teams that use the Warriors name use it along with Native American imagery. I think the Golden State Warriors, I think, stopped doing that a long time ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a weird guy dressed in blue is the latest human like mascot that they've used.
I think if anything, you kind of go with what is representative of the city that you're in. Yeah, right.
Always. That's my ultimate preference.
Yeah. And I think that has been kind of one of the things that has always made the Redskins name kind of weird, right? Because people don't necessarily attribute Native Americans and Washington or the DC Maryland area in any good light historically, so it's not necessarily something that kind of comes to mind in kind of great ways, whereas you have other things that do it, and I think do it somewhat well in representation, and there is sometimes a little bit of weird mockery that does happen. But you have things like the Kansas City Chiefs, which I think is a okay usage of that thing.
There's a larger conversation to be had about cultural appropriation
mm-hmm. in
sports, and I think the Chiefs are kind of on that line. There's stages of it because there's incidences like the Florida State Seminoles.
They have a
deal with the Seminole tribe. Mm-hmm. So there's a partnership there.
Mm-hmm.
They're allowed to use that name. And then there's money exchanged back and forth.
That was the other one I was going to bring up, right?
To me, that's okay, because that's in conjunction with the tribe.
I think the best term we could use and come up with is in good faith, right? That one is done somewhere in there in good faith, right? And then you kind of get into some of the baseball ones, which I've always...
Well, yeah. So, obviously, like on the list of offensiveness, the Washington Redskins, because their name is an actual slur, that tops the list. And then the Cleveland Indians, not necessarily because of the name, although that's kind of weird, to just like to name your team after a race, but it was the mascot that they were using,
mm-hmm.
which was a caricature. And so that was offensive. They stopped using the mascot, but they are also talking about changing their name as well, mostly due to the cultural appropriation arguments. So and then the Braves, where they do like the tomahawk chop
mm-hmm.
chant, and the Chiefs do that as well. So, and I think the Braves have actually tried to distance themselves from that, but like I see mixed things because I've heard that they don't want people doing that anymore, but they also play the music still that like prompts people to do that. So I don't necessarily believe that.
I mean, the Seminoles kind of have a very similar thing, but for some reason, once again,
guys,
that has never bothered me. Yeah.
Guys, there is an exception to all of this.
Okay.
And it's the fact that Central Michigan University, this university here in Michigan, they actually use the name, the Chippewa, with authorization and clearance from the Chippewa Nation here in Michigan. They went to the NCAA. They said, hey, no, it's cool. We're in Michigan. They're in Michigan. It's cool. And the NCAA was like, all right, okay, if you're cool with it, all right. Now, I don't know if the Seminoles did that with Florida State. I don't know if they have or haven't, but it's one of those things that if you are going to use a name like this and use the imagery, it is not that difficult to actually ask the indigenous people how they feel about it. It's really not that difficult.
Yeah, because it's...
Because crazy thing, guys, they might just say yes, and they might just say it's okay. Unless you're someone like Dan Snyder, who's just like, nah, fuck it, we're just going to do what we want. Yeah, it's a slur. I don't care.
Yeah, it's you know, not all Native American tribes are the same. So, you know, between one tribe and another, they might see it differently. And I mean, culturally around the world, different cultures approach appropriation a little bit differently. Some cultures are fine with it. Some cultures even enjoy it. And they like seeing variation of what other cultures do with parts of their culture. And others, like those, you know, traditions that are copied and mocked by other people, are sacred. So it's so they do see it as mockery instead of seeing it as celebration or admiration. I think in the case for a lot of the U.S., when it comes to oppressed cultures, it's weird to see the oppression first and then the picking and choosing of parts of that culture to corporatize and make a shit ton of money off of that after you've oppressed those people for being that way. So it's like, I think that's where it gets touchy in the U.S. I think teams are just getting around to realizing that people are getting around to recognizing that. But the name of the Washington football team has long been at the top of the list of the most offensive things to get rid of. So at least they've also recognized, okay, we're not going to do anything Native American related with this new thing. They're going to keep the color scheme, but we'll see what name they come up with.
Let them just be the Washington Senators.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that. They could, it needs to be something related to the city. Ultimately something related to the city. The ESPN article that we link is going to be...
Washington House.
somebody suggested like the Washington Pigskins because they play football, and then they also had a group of fans. I think those guys are still around, but these guys that would wear these pig outfits, and they called themselves the Hoggettes, and so they kind of became a group of famous fans, and so I think that would kind of fit, but.
I don't know why I thought the Senators were the team that played the Globetrotters, but the Senators is... Yeah,
those are the Generals.
Yeah, the Senators is what the Nationals actually originally were way, way, way back in the day.
Okay.
You go. You got history with the name. Just there you go.
I mean, because the hockey team's the Washington Capitals. The basketball team's original name was the Washington Bullets, which was changed because of the violent imagery from that. The Washington Wizards now is the basketball team, which is, I don't know, not really representative of anything, but doesn't really have to be. But it's nice if it can represent the city a little bit. And the Nationals is, you know, the nation. I don't know. They can come up with something, and it's probably could end up being something political, or it could be something not political, but still somewhat related to the city. We'll see. But the ESPN article that we're going to link to in the show notes talks about what actually goes into the process of changing a team name. So they talk about the the name change from the Tennessee Oilers to the Tennessee Titans. And then a couple other teams that have changed their names recently. And you know, it's like a 2-year process because you got to do all the branding and all that other stuff. And then that's the stuff that Dan Snyder and company did not want to deal with, or like the stuff that they used as an excuse. And so like they've spent all these years cultivating a brand around this, you know, around this racial slur. And so that's what caused them to dig their heels in. But, you know, one thing that this article emphasizes is after a couple of years, nobody gives a shit that the name has been changed. Like nobody wants to go back to the old name.
I mean, you'll have somebody who somehow, some way gets in front of a news camera and says some dumb shit, but they're not a representative of like the overall fandom. So
there's nobody in Tampa Bay.
Fuck that guy.
There's nobody in Tampa Bay that's like, I wish we were still the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
There probably is, though.
I mean, there's probably like one or two. Like you said, like, there's nobody that mad about it. You get your money back that you spend rebranding the team because everybody's buying new jerseys now. Mm-hmm. So new jerseys, new hats, you got new logos, and you get everybody talking about your team for a little bit. So a little bit of publicity, a little bit of goodwill. Although I don't know if Dan Snyder is ever going to get goodwill because of the way he runs his team. But other than that, like this is a step in the right direction. So took him long enough, but it's, and I don't know the way they dug their heels in before, I almost felt like this wasn't something that I would ever see happen in my lifetime. I don't know how you feel about it living closer to the area, Kaz, but
my mind has definitely changed, but where we were when he originally had the ability to grandstand and stand in front of a press conference and people and have them all point out how his name is problematic and him look at them and just be able to be like, I ain't changing shit and you can deal with it was just the realm that I thought we were in. I just assumed that that's kind of how things went. And I was assuming that if anything, it would only come under rebranding when it came under new ownership, 30
guys,
years down the line.
I want to say something that might be a little controversial. And I want to say that I think that FedEx should get a lot of credit for what they did. And mm-hmm. I know a lot of people will say, well, they only did it because people were complaining and they saw it as a business decision. And my response to that is, so what? If a company like FedEx sees people upset about them being somewhat related to a football franchise that's named after a racial slur, and they decide, it's probably a good idea for us to work on that. It'll probably be better for our business. What's the problem? It might be good business, but it's also good for society at large. So I don't really see the problem.
I think the only way people see that as a problem is just kind of in the intent of it. But for me, it falls along the same lines as NASCAR, right? And I kind of praise NASCAR, right? Because they looked at one section of their fandom and has decided that it is problematic and probably not, doesn't hold as much value as opening themselves up to a new fandom by being able to stand behind a movement that is currently happening in the landscape, right? So it gives them a sense to open themselves up to more people while also showing that they as an entity, even though I said, entities are kind of bullshit, have some kind of value, right? So they went, hey, we don't agree with those things either. And you know what? Now's as good a time as any to change it. And if you don't like it, get the fuck out. You know what I mean? Like, but they did it in a very somewhat nice manner. But I think that's kind of just I think that as for a business, that's the way you handle it. I don't need businesses to necessarily have identities. I need them to make good business decisions that make me want to spend money with them. Me being a person who kind of used to like NASCAR but kind of got out of it is now back into NASCAR because they made a business decision that aligns a little bit with something that I think is good for them to do. So it makes me, it brings value to me. It doesn't necessarily fix anything, but it brings value to me to know that they are willing to do those kind of things. And that's it.
Yeah.
They're willing to make a tough decision.
Yeah. And symbols matter. And I think, you know, like I it's not like I'm going to be, you know, shipping with FedEx more because of this.
Yeah.
But like, at the same time, yeah, they do deserve a lot of credit because they were the ones that kicked us off. And a bunch of people or a bunch of other companies fell in line behind them, but it took one company to kick this off. And it was, I think once FedEx did it, the talk shifted from like, this will never happen to, mm-hmm. Oh my God, could this possibly happen? And then the dominoes started falling and it became, oh, wow, this is happening.
Yeah.
And then to now where it's like, this is going to happen within a couple days. And so, you know, that is a dramatic shift over say like 2 weeks since FedEx first spoke out. So I think they kicked all this off. They definitely should get the credit for this. They get the mark on the stat sheet for helping change this. And, you know, no, they didn't solve racism. Like, this doesn't solve any of that. But I think, you know, a lot of Native American people get to grow up in this country and not see that there is a football team named after a racial slur and everybody is just kind of okay with it. So I think that's important, even if it doesn't provide any structural change. I think it's an important psychological change. And oh, I don't know, progress.
All right, let's move on to kind of the big thing going on in the NFL. And that is Patrick Mahomes and his 10-year contract extension worth up to $500 million.
I believe we are contractually obligated to call him the chosen one.
Okay. That was probably in there somewhere within the bylines with all the other things that are also in this contract. Yeah, this thing had to be thick. This had to be a goddamn novel, probably, that got sat down in front of these people.
Yeah, because apparently, like, each year of this contract has different, like, different terms, different adjustments. I basically woke up to the news of this with a DM from DJM saying that Patrick Mahomes got a baseball contract without having to play baseball. And of course, cynical me responded by saying, oh, let's just see what the guaranteed money is first. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Let's start there, right? Because that's kind of the big thing that everybody wants to talk about. And one day I think we should talk about contracts. But that's for a future thing. So we are somewhere in the lines of about 400 plus million in a soft guarantee.
Yeah. So the way these guarantees work, these are not full guarantees, but for right now, everything through. Okay, so first of all, it's a 10-year extension to the end of his rookie deal.
Contract that he's still on. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's essentially a 12-year contract because they reworked the last 2 years of his rookie deal. He is going to be under, I forgot exactly what year, but he is going to be under contract until like the 2030 season, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not guaranteed for that full amount, but every year that he's on the roster by the third day of the league calendar, it guarantees the next 2 years. So it's like a pre-guarantee. So if they want to cut him this year, the next 2 years are still guaranteed. And if they want to cut him 3 years from now, he will get 5 years of this contract.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to cut him 5 years from now, he will get 7 years worth of this contract.
Most times, depending on kind of the individual or the situation, these contracts are weighted one way or the other, right? They either favor the house, which is the team, or they favor the player, the individual, and maybe his agents. Looking through this, as far as I've done, I haven't looked over the whole thing or gone as deep into it because I don't think a lot of it is out there yet. But a lot of it that I've been able to kind of surmise from things on Twitter and other things seem as this is like one of the most even big contract deals that I've seen, right? Because there is a lot of protections for the team itself, but Patrick Mahomes does have a lot of leeway within this contract, right? He does have a no trade clause. He does have these remaining 2 years guaranteed before this contract fully kicks in, which I think is kind of a win on the other side, right? Because it allows if somebody for some goddamn reason wants to try to snake in there and offer him more money, which I don't think anyone will. It kind of allows that little bit of a skew, but it allows him to almost keep his options open even throughout the length of this contract, while also offering them ways out. And then there are a lot of ridiculous things in here, like he can't play baseball or ride a jet ski. And I love it. I love shit like that.
It gives both sides flexibility.
Yeah.
The team can still cut him. So they're not on the hook for all of this if they don't want to be. But they are going to have to pay some penalty to him if they end this contract early. If he gets a really bad injury and he's not the same player as he used to be, that, you know, they're going to have to take some sort of cap hit, but it's only going to be the next 2 years worth of cap hits and not the remainder of this 10-year contract. You normally don't see contracts this long in the NFL for this reason, because they kind of expect players to get injured and not be the same player that they used to be. So, so that's why we get so many contracts that are not favorable to the players. And that's why there's such an emphasis on getting guaranteed money for so many players, especially running backs, to try to get as much guaranteed money as you can, because you have no idea when they're going to cut you. And once they cut you, then you're immediately cut off. So in this case, Patrick Mahomes won't be immediately cut off. He will continue to get money for the next couple of years once, if he ever does get cut. So he's still young. He just came off a Super Bowl win. In a way, also, like, part of this contract is a reward for that too. Because he's on a rookie scale contract right now, and so that's a bargain for any team, and so in a way it's like, here, let's give you some money just for the fact that you helped. Not only did you just help us win a Super Bowl, but you are the first quarterback in maybe 15 years to actually cement his hold on this position since maybe Joe Montana, for being the franchise quarterback for this team. Cause every other quarterback for the Chiefs during this time period has been kind of just a placeholder for the next guy. And a franchise quarterback in the NFL is incredibly important. So, but also because franchise quarterbacks are so important, they can get paid a shit ton of money. And sometimes that shit ton of money takes up a huge percentage of the cap, but they've structured this deal so that Mahomes never takes up more than 23.5% of the salary cap, which is kind of like 25% is kind of like the upper limit. And once a quarterback gets more than that, then it becomes harder to fill out the rest of the team. So they've managed to maintain flexibility while also making sure that this guy gets paid and gets security. And, you know, there's just a lot of goodwill to go around on this contract. It seems like everybody's happy. You know, the Chiefs are happy. Their future is kind of set. Andy Reid is happy. He's going to he's one of the oldest coaches in the NFL, but he's going to coach a few more years. He feels like Patrick Mahomes has given him new life. And you know, and the Chiefs, you know, a lot of times after a team wins a Super Bowl, everybody wants to get paid. And now the Chiefs can pay those people and pay them to stay and keep a strong team around Patrick Mahomes so that they don't waste these next 10 years. The projected NFL salary cap for the 2021 season is $198 million. So I think I don't remember what Mahomes' cap hit for the 2021 season is, it's like $24.8 million. So he's right around that. That's 1/8. So he's at like 12%, if I did that math correctly. So it's, you know, they still have a lot of time to build a good team around him and keep building good teams around him for these next 10 years. Like if I'm in the AFC West right now, those people, the Raiders, the Broncos and the Chargers are probably the only people that hate this deal. because they got to deal with Patrick Mahomes for the next 12 years. This is just a great deal all around. On top of that, this broke records. This is the largest contract in North American pro sports history. This beats out Mike Trout's 12-year $426.5 million contract. This is just a shit ton of money. So like he's secure. This is on top of that for the Chiefs side, there are a lot of other quarterbacks around the league that are looking to get paid as well. Dak Prescott kind of being one of the bigger names that is kind of mired in the middle of contract negotiations that are not going very well. Mm-hmm. And I remember a couple of years ago when the 49ers paid Jimmy Garoppolo a shit ton of money and everybody said that, oh, that's too much money to pay for Jimmy Garoppolo. Because it's more than what other players are getting right now, but because they got to it first, that anchored everything. And so all the contracts that came afterwards ended up having to get higher and higher. Because all these quarterbacks said, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo is getting this much money. Why can't you pay me at least that much or more? So it's a little different because Patrick Mahomes, I think we can call him the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yes.
Yeah, and Matt Stafford is a guy who got his contract even before that. And I think there was some criticism about that, too. But, you know, the same thing, like the earlier you can get this contract nailed down, the more everybody who nails down contracts after you has to react to that. And so Patrick Mahomes getting this contract means Dak Prescott has more leverage when he demands an even bigger contract than the one he's been demanding now. And so that makes it difficult for other teams to sign their franchise guys. It puts all of those teams on the back foot. And so, you know, you got your future secured. Everybody else is now destabilized a little bit. And you did this when you are defending Super Bowl champions.
Yeah.
So, like, the Chiefs have had a great couple of months. I mean, a great couple of seasons so far, and it looks like they're well positioned for the next 12 years, at least. We are going to see the chosen one in a Chiefs uniform for a long time.
And I think it also kind of goes to say, like yeah, we've seen some. All right, you know, fuck it. We've seen some shit. People get some good contracts, right? I think this almost puts us in a place to start where, you know, like, the guy came in and he did good goddamn things out of the gate. And it's, I don't want to say it's like you have to work for it, because not everyone has, but goddamn, he worked for it. So
he did sit for a year behind Alex Smith. So that's
patience, man.
But yeah, he DJM says he did all the things. He literally went through the entire process. He learned, he studied, and then by the time he showed up, he just blew everybody out of the water.
Yeah.
So it's,
I think on both sides, my thing is, one, don't think you deserve the money if you haven't earned the money. And two, sometimes, you know what? Give somebody some goddamn incentive to actually want to earn the money.
and if you earn the money, go get it.
Yeah.
And when the guy earns the money, pay him. Don't fuck around. And I think the nice thing about this, and hopefully we see the thing that I hope we see other teams copy, is this kind of unconventional guarantee structure where, like, you can at least give somebody a little bit more security, and maybe you don't want to guarantee stuff right, or you don't want to guarantee the entire contract, but maybe you guarantee, you know, you say that if we cut you, then you'll at least get paid for the next 2 years in this contract or so. And so stuff like this can lead to some very interesting compromise deals between two sides that might be pretty far apart when it comes to trying to protect their own interests. So I don't know, maybe we'll see other teams try to do this as well. And because I mean, these contract negotiations get kind of messy, and I always fall on the player side of these, but it does suck to see a team fall apart because they can't come to an agreement with a guy who is an important cornerstone of their franchise. But then again, player movement is what makes the salary cap effective. So it's a bunch of different facets of the same coin. Maybe one of these days we should do an episode about contracts and about CBAs. I'm worried that it'd get kind of boring sometimes, but yeah, DJM says we should applaud when teams and players work something out, because there is enough complicated stuff in these contracts that I feel like there's a place where people can find a middle ground most of the time if they don't manage to piss each other off. And so I think maybe this is a case of winning, helping everything, because everybody's in a good mood. Everybody involved in this negotiation just won a Super Bowl. So they have every incentive to keep the current relationship going. Yeah, I think much to the chagrin of other teams in this league.
Yeah. Speaking of doing what needs to be done, I think we've done what needs to be done here. We've talked about all the goings on in sports. Thank you guys for joining us. As we kind of we went through a pretty big list of things on today's show. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here with us. You know the deal. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at King Cash. JVZ is JVZ. DJM is just call me DJM. Make sure you head on over to the website sportsoddsandends.com so you can dive a little bit deeper into all of the articles that we talked about today and maybe have a conversation with us about it on Twitter. Other than that, thank you for being here. And God damn it, watch an online tournament today. There's probably one happening. Just, you know, give it a view.